There's been a fair amount of publicity in recent days about Stephen Hawking's new book. Stephen Hawking is the brilliant occupant of the chair once held by Sir Isaac Newton. And oh, how things have changed. Newton, who discovered well, many things, but his famous thing was that he introduced us to gravity, now sees his work being used in a very different way. Newton knew that the laws of nature point to a lawgiver, but the present occupant of that chair, Mr. Hawking, does not believe that. And in his new book, Designed to Sell, that's not the title, that's simply like his other work, the intention, the very explicit intention, which he has said, and he's outsold anybody else who's a science writer like that, but in his new book, he has garnered enormous publicity because he declares that there is no need for God, that the universe came about because of laws that don't need a lawgiver. Basically, gravity. Ironic, isn't it? But he said, because there is gravity, says Mr. Hawking, we don't need a God. I would not even comment on that sort of foolishness were it not for the fact that I received a very nice email from one of our campers. Hello, Pastor Wood. My name is blank. I won't share his name here. I went to Camp Arrowwood the first session, and I had a great time at camp and meeting you, but I do know you are a Christian, and I have trouble believing in the Bible and the God of the Bible, as in, He created all things. However, I do not believe in the atheist Big Bang. I still believe there is a God, just not the Christian God. So I need help believing that the Christian God is real. And I know Christianity is a faith-based religion, so for Christianity, I require just a bit of faith-based proof. I know I can find faith-based proof in the Bible, but obviously the Bible isn't enough. So, to the main questions. One, why do you believe in the Christian God? Two, what do you believe about the Christian God? Three, do you question the Bible? Thanks for answering my questions. Signed, this young man. Now, I'm absolutely thrilled that this fellow wrote to me. I really am. Because instead of just deciding on the basis of the fact that he has questions and doubts, he's not going to believe. He's writing, and he actually uses a phrase. Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So I need help believing. I need help believing. Let me tell you something. We do need help believing. All of us need help believing. God is the one who gives us faith. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. And the fact of the matter is, Jesus is the author and the perfecter of our faith. So when this young man says, I need help believing, he's saying more than he knows. He's declaring a truth that is greater than he comprehends. And so in the first few sessions of our school term this year, I wanted to begin to try and address some of his questions, and that is because I can talk more easily than I can type, okay? I'm a really slow typist. Now, I did write an answer to him. I'm not going to read the answer to you, but I did write an answer to him, and then he has followed up on what I suggested that he do next and has written back to me and thanked me for making the suggestion and so forth. And he is busy right now doing some homework I've assigned him, reading some stuff that I've urged him to read. But I want to address these questions, and let me just recap them for you again. Why do you believe in the Christian God? Okay, that's the first thing we're going to look at over a period of several days, God willing. Secondly, what do you believe about the Christian God? Well, for goodness sake, that would fill books, wouldn't it? I mean, if you want a really concise declaration of what I believe, you could read Grudem's Systematic Theology, which is not very concise. But I do not agree with Wayne Grudem on every jot and tittle, but I find his systematic theology to be the best out there today. So if you're like, where can I find a good systematic theology? Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology, really well done. What do you believe about the Christian God? That would fill volumes, all right? And third, do you question the Bible? We'll actually get to that question, but I think that it'll become pretty evident between now and the time I specifically address that question that I don't really question the Bible very much, because the way in which I question the Bible, I'll go ahead and address it now. Just put it on there. Put it on top of the table right now. Here it is. The way in which I question the Bible is to say, what does that mean? Okay? And how does that apply to me? That's the way I question the Bible. There are important questions to ask when we study the Bible, because the Bible is true whether we understand it or not, whether we believe it or not, whether we obey it or not. It's true. I've lived long enough, studied enough, and been blessed by God enough to know that His Word is always right. And the things that at times I found just confounding, how in the world can that be so? It turned out He was right, I was wrong. And over and over and over, archaeologists have been stunned to discover the accuracy of the Scriptures, even regarding things that they declared with great certitude had to be wrong. They were anachronisms. They were things that, you know, later people tried to go back and describe a scene, and they said things that made it clear from the fact that didn't even exist yet, that they didn't really know what they were talking about. They were inventing stuff. And then it turns out they dig deep enough in the earth over there in the Middle East, and they find, oh, I guess that was there at that time, and I guess we were wrong. I guess that the Bible's right again and again and again. So, when this young man says, now I know Christianity is a faith-based religion, and so I just want some faith-based proof. And I know I can find faith-based proof in the Bible, but obviously the Bible isn't enough. Well, actually the Bible is enough. The Bible is enough. But one of the things we discover in the Bible is God inspiring the writers to appeal to things that are not in the Bible. That's one of the reasons the Bible's enough, okay? Because the Bible actually points us to things in history, to things in creation, and to the fact that there is indeed a Creator God. So, again, next few days, God willing, we're going to begin to look at this first question: why do you believe in the Christian God? Why do you believe in the Christian God? He is talking about here the Creator who's described in the Bible. That's a great place to begin. Why do you believe in the Christian God? In Romans chapter 1, Romans chapter 1, the Apostle Paul, beginning in verse 18, says, "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified Him as God, nor gave thanks to Him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. And they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Now, I want you to see something. Paul appeals, first of all, to creation. Creation. He starts there. He doesn't build some other case and then say, now, based on that, we ought to believe that there is a Creator. He says, everybody can see it. It's obvious. And the fact of the matter is, throughout most of history, on every continent where we've had people living, it has been very apparent to the vast majority of people that there must be some sort of God behind this creation. Paul does not say that there is enough evidence about who God is to be saved. He doesn't say on the basis of what God has revealed in creation, we can be saved. He says on the basis of what God has revealed in creation, there's enough to be condemned. We're all without excuse because it is obvious that we are not the boss. It's obvious that there is a power that is greater than we are. There is a God, and you're not it. Okay? That's what we learn from creation. We learn that there's something out there bigger than we are. When my son Andrew had the privilege of helping bring the gospel to people who'd never heard in a remote area, his heart was thrilled as he heard the translator saying what this primitive jungle dweller was saying. I always knew that there must be a God who is bigger than the gods I worship, but I had no one to tell me about it. This guy was excited because all the years that he worshiped idols, he knew there was more. Now, how did he know that? Had somebody from the Coca-Cola Corporation brought a tract along with the... No, this was in a remote area, so remote that even Coca-Cola hadn't gotten there yet. That's always the mark of frontier missions. If you can get to a place before Coca-Cola, you are really doing pioneer work. One of the embarrassments for missionaries has been the number of places where they have gone, thinking they are doing frontier work, only to find that the church's zeal for spreading the gospel had not matched Coca-Cola's zeal for spreading their product. I'll tell you something. In the most distant, remote parts of the earth, people who've never seen a Westerner, never heard of the Bible, never heard of Jesus, know there's a God. They know it. It's obvious. Well, then how come there are sophisticated, educated, intelligent people who don't believe in God? Because they're fools. That's why. I mean, that is why. The psalmist says it twice. I think it's Psalm 14. Verse 1, where he says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And then again later, in like Psalm 50-something, he says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Well, why are you calling those people a fool? I'm just telling you what God says about them. Stephen Behe, in his book, Darwin's Black Box, says, if as I turn onto the campus of the school where I teach, I see the name of the school in flowers by the entrance. L-E-H-I-G. Oh, isn't that amazing? The flowers here have actually grown up in a pattern that spells the name of the school. What an astounding coincidence. That's where I teach. That's the name of the school. See, you can see it written in the flowers there. That is so... And to think that that just happened by chance. Isn't that amazing? What a coincidence. You'd have to be a fool, wouldn't you? If you're at somebody's house and you say to those people, look, we've been enjoying your hospitality. We'd like to return the favor by taking you out for dinner. So let's stop our game of Scrabble and go out for a meal. Our treat, we'll go to McDonald's. And then you glance back and notice on the board that the leftover letters have been arranged to spell cheapskate. Would you think, oh, isn't it amazing that when they dump those letters on the board, they spelled that word? No, you'd have to be a fool. Are you criticizing McDonald's? No, I actually ate at McDonald's just the other day. I like McDonald's. But if I want to take somebody out for a really wonderful, memorable meal, McDonald's is not the way to impress your friends. Right? Okay. And if the word cheapskate appears on the Scrabble board, it wasn't because of an accident. It's because somebody arranged the letters. If you didn't already have enough evidence, learn about DNA. DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. Aren't you impressed? I can still remember what I learned in high school. DNA, that beautiful, beautiful, elegant arrangement of proteins that determines what color your eyes are going to be, what texture and color your hair will be, and whether your eyes are likely to get certain conditions as you get older, and whether or not you'll have a cleft in your chin, like Grandpa, or no cleft, like other Grandpa. All that stuff wired in by God, the Creator, the Designer. Let me tell you something, folks. I'm just proclaiming to you what Scripture says and what creation says. There is a God. And He is great. And He is good.
You appeal to creation, but it seems to me that you've got a problem there. Because if there is a God, He's not very nice. Otherwise, why would there be cancer? You talk about the elegance of DNA, but what about the problem of evil in the world?
Well, we're going to get to that. Not today, but God willing, we're going to get to that soon. I just want to plant a little seed, however. If there is no God, what in the world are you talking about when you say the problem of evil? What are you talking about? If there is no God, what's wrong with cancer? If there is no God, there is no evil. If there is no God, then the notion that there shouldn't be death is utter insanity. We don't go, the mold in my shower died. I feel terrible. I wonder if it was because of that chemical I sprayed on it. Is that the way we respond to the death of mold? Well, let me tell you something. If you are nothing but a piece of highly evolved slime, you're just a bigger piece of mold. Okay? But no, I've got pretty eyes. Well, I've seen some actually nice colors in a Petri dish. Okay? So if there is no God, all of your arguments against him are insanity. They're insanity. That's why if you look at a guy like Hawking, who says because there is gravity, we don't need God, that's insanity. That is a self-defeating argument. He's saying because gravity exists, we don't need God. Well, excuse me, where did gravity come from? How did the gravity get here? Okay, if you're going to do that, now we have to move from Hawking's argument to Dawkins' argument. Okay, if you're going to do that, if you're going to say that God is the explanation, that God is the prime mover, that God is the creator, then I have to ask you a question, Mr. Wood. Where did God come from? Ha, 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 gotcha. Well, actually, Mr. Dawkins, that's not a new question. That is a question that every quasi-intelligent preschooler asks their parents. It really is. And when you engage in that sort of question, you are putting yourself on the level with preschoolers, which is very fitting because that's kind of the way you're described in Romans 1. Suppressing the truth in unrighteousness and worshiping that which is created instead of the one who created it. So let's talk about that for a minute. Where did God come from? Where did God come from? Well, why the question? Well, because if everything has to come from somewhere, we see that in all of creation. We see that all around us, everything comes from somewhere. I mean, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken. But I know that because of having read Genesis 1. God made the creatures and then told them to reproduce. Hence the chicken, then the egg. So that's not an unanswerable question. It's not even a complicated question, if you happen to be familiar with the book that was given to us by the Creator. But that's, I digress. If we look all around us and we see that things come from somewhere, that things are because of something else, then it only makes sense to ask, if everything else came from God, where did God come from? The problem with the question is putting God on the level with created things. God is the creator. He is not the creation. He isn't part of the creation. And he is unlike his creation in that the creation is finite, both in space and in time. The creation has not always been. Matter is not eternal. Things haven't always been as they are. There was God before there was time. God spoke the universe into being. That's the truth. Whether you comprehend it or not, whether you believe it or not, I declare to you what God says, and that is, he created the heavens and the earth. Now, because God created everything, it is not a logical thing to say, well, then God must have had a creator. No. The reason everything else has a creator is because God created everything. But the fact that everything he created has a creator doesn't mean the creator has to have a creator. And to argue that it does is not being logical. It's not being rational or scientific. It is being oppositional. Because it's saying, on the basis of science, which deals with that which is created, I'm ruling out the possibility of a God who is the creator. I'm sorry, on the basis of what evidence? You see, what Hawkins does, or Dawkins rather, what Dawkins does and Hawking does, in both cases, is to step outside the field of science into the field of philosophy and make statements that are unscientific in nature. They cannot, on the basis of empirical science, say that there is no God. Now, Christopher Hitchens, who's presently dying of throat cancer, wants us to know that when he says he's an atheist, he's not really saying there is no God. Somebody needs to teach him English. His degree was clearly not in that. There has been an attempt by atheists in our generation to redefine atheism because it's been pointed out to too many of them that atheism, there is no God, is an intellectually preposterous, indefensible position. You can't prove that there is no God. You would have to know everything in the universe in order to be able to say there is no God. What you can say is, I don't believe in the God of the Bible. That you can say. But at that point, you're not simply an atheist, you're a fool. But again, I digress. I want you to understand, the God who is God has made the evidence for his existence obvious all around us in sunrise and sunset, in the stars in the night sky, in the way that we get life from the sun and the water and the air. The more we study creation, the more we're amazed at the brilliance of God, as have people in every generation declared the greatness of God as they look at his handiwork. The heavens are telling the glory of God. The firmament, the land, shows forth his handiwork. Day after day pours forth speech. Everywhere on the planet, God provides ample testimony for his existence. So why would these people say, I don't believe there's a God? Why would they do that? Because they don't want to have to answer to God. They don't want to have to bow to God. They are in rebellion against God. But it's not because of evidence. It's because they're suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. Now, intellectually, is that a slam dunk case? Is that just obviously, okay, now I see all the evidence? No, no, no. I declare what Scripture says. That is, the evidence is all around us. If you are able to stand there and keep your eyes shut tight and keep your hands over your ears so you don't hear the sound of the birds or the wind in the trees and say, I don't see it, I don't believe it, that's your prerogative. But it's not going to change the reality. And just as surely as gravity exists, whether we recognize it or not, believe in it or not, or fall flat on our face because we weren't paying attention, gravity still exists. And the one who invented gravity exists. There is a creator, and he is good, and he is kind, and he is merciful. Is there an explanation for the problem of evil? Well, not this morning, there's not. We'll talk about that in the near future, God willing.